an issue, that an abortion of this largely Long Island district. Can you talk about the fact that the Democrats adopted the Republican stance on militarization, and yet it was the Republicans that rejected it, and what this bodes for what's happening next?
The idea that Democrats can out-tough the Republican Party when it comes to immigration policy is a dead-end strategy. The politicians like to imagine that we can police our way out of immigration policy problems, but they're imagining a fantasy world that has never existed and does not exist right now. If the solution to regulating migration were to be bought by more Border Patrol agents, by more ICE prison beds, by more advanced technologies that are being deployed at communities that cross the border on a regular basis, then we would have bought that solution a long time ago. But the reality is that so long as people have a desire to get to the United States, so long as people have families and family and friends who are already in the United States, and so long as people are able to begin those lives that they dream of in the United States by getting to work soon after arriving, which we all know is exactly what happens in cities and towns, large and small, across this country, whether those migrants have the federal government's permission to work or not, then people are going to be coming. And if what elected officials want is to find out who's coming to the United States, is to ensure that there is an orderly migration process, then they need to open up the lawful pathways into the United States. And the bill that was introduced in Congress would have begun to move in that direction, not nearly enough, and those positive attributes were really overshadowed by some of the policing focused approaches and also the clampdown on asylum. And what happens is if we simply reinforce the border by building Trump style walls or deploying more law enforcement agents, then all we're doing is turning the migration process into something that is more expensive and more dangerous. And the result is we then push people further into the hands of unscrupulous smugglers, and also make it more likely that they will die in the process of getting to the United States.
Cesar, I wanted to ask you, I think it was last year, Mexico passed China to become the largest trading partner of the United States. It is the number one country for imports and exports of goods to the United States. How do you reconcile the fact that people, leaders in this country have no problem with increasing goods crossing the border? In fact, no one complains about all the goods that are crossing the border between Mexico and the United States, but want to erect, as you say, barriers and restrictions on the flow of people back and forth across that same border.
Well, the United States is a vital trade partner of Mexico and vice versa. This is not a new phenomenon, nor is the fact that we're perfectly happy to see a free exchange of goods and products, but not so happy to see an exchange of people. But the reality is that the people are going to be crossing the border anyway. The people are crossing the border. People come into the United States. Sometimes they have the government's permission to come here, and they stay after the fact. That's true of Canadians. That's true of Western Europeans. That's true of Mexicans. That's not a result of citizenship. That's just the result of the fact that, you know, life happens and priorities shift over time. And so if what we truly want is to encourage cross-border ties, then we need to stop using the border as a political baseball bat to beat political opponents with. You know, we've seen the Biden administration shut down ports of entry for a few days at a time. We've seen the governor of Texas, Greg Abbott, demand inspection of 100% of the cargo, commercial cargo carrying vehicles crossing at certain ports of entry in a way, as a way of, you know, making a point about border security. And all of these have an enormous impact, not simply on the people, but also on the economic relationship between the United States and Mexico. And it's in the interest of the United States to have a strong Mexican economy, just like it's in the interest of the of Mexican citizens to have a strong U.S. economy. We are not living in vacuums. We will never live in vacuums. We cannot seal ourselves off from any part of the world, and certainly not from our neighbors, from places that many of us have strong ties to. Many of us have family, and in fact, many of us have lived there. You mentioned my latest book, Welcome the Wretched. I wrote most of that book while sitting in my apartment in Mexico City. So this is not a faraway land that's unfamiliar to many of us. For many of us, when we think of migration from Latin America, we think of our family, we think of our friends, we think of our neighbors and the people who are closest to us and most meaningful to us.
You're a professor of law, and I want to talk about your book in the context of, well, this border deal included something like $7 billion for ICE to increase deportation and detention of immigrants. Talk about your book, Welcome the Wretched, in defense of the criminal alien, in which you make the case against the criminalization of immigrants and also argue immigrants should not be deported if they're charged or convicted of a crime. Talk about what you mean and what you're advocating for.
The United States is nothing if not a country that has been built by wholly ordinary people. People who have risen to their finest moments when the time called for it, but people whose lives are also peppered by their worst moments, that is, failures, that is, moments in which we engage in regrettable conduct and reprehensible conduct. And that has nothing to do with their citizenship and everything to do with their humanity. And that is true of migrants who are coming today. And that was true of migrants who have come, who came in generations past. The reality is that most of us spend most of our days trying to be the best versions of ourselves. And the reality is that all of us fail to be those best versions of ourselves at one moment or another. And so I want immigration law to reflect the reality of the humans that it is supposed to serve. And those humans are people who will, on most occasions, try to do right by their families and their friends and their neighbors, but sometimes they will inevitably fail. And I want this to be a country that accepts people for being exactly the fallible, imperfect humans that those of us who happen to have been born into our U.S. citizenship are, and that quite often we celebrate, whether that's in popular culture or whether we're talking about elected officials who are facing dozens of indictments at a given time for anything from, you know, insurrection against the country to sexual violence against women.
Well, clearly, this is a major issue that will continue throughout this election year and beyond, and we'll continue to cover it. Cesar Cuauhtemoc García Hernández, want to thank you so much for being with us. Law professor at Ohio State University, author of the new book, Welcome the Wretched, in defense of the criminal alien. We'll also link to your op-ed in the New York Times headline, "This immigration bill was never going to fix the border." Coming up, what's the State Department doing about the killing, the arrests and the attacks on Palestinian Americans, both in the occupied territories and here at home? Stay with us. Israel is Actual Age by Thomas Bangalter. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. A Palestinian-American detained in the West Bank by the Israeli military last week was beaten in custody and denied medication. This is according to her family. Samaha Ismail was detained near the Silwad village area in the West Bank February 5th. The family said she was dragged from her home by Israeli soldiers and badly beaten. They also said her home was destroyed in the raid. The Israeli military confirmed Ismail's detention, saying she was arrested for, quote, incitement on social media, but did not respond to the allegations of mistreatment raised by the family. The family's calling on the State Department to gain consular access to her and to secure her release. At a press briefing, the State Department said it could not address any specifics about the case. Samaha Ismail's case is just one of a number of Palestinian Americans detained, attacked, or killed, both in the occupied West Bank and in the United States. And we're going to go through some of those cases. We're joined now by Samaha Ismail's son, Suleiman Hamed. He's joining us from New Orleans. And we're joined from Atlanta by Edward Ahmed Mitchell, a civil rights attorney and national deputy director of CARE. That's the Council on American Islamic Relations. We welcome you both to Democracy Now! Samaher, can you, Suleiman, can you tell us about your mother? Where was she when she was detained? What's exactly happened to her? Have you been able to communicate with her in the Israeli jail that she's being held?
So I'm Suleiman Hamed. I can give you a little bit of insight on that. So it was Monday morning, February 5th, Jerusalem time. They came in the middle of the night, raided our home, dragged her out of the house in her pajamas, didn't even give her a chance to wear her hijab. They broke stuff all inside the house. They came in with muddy shoes on purpose. Long story short, they came and took her. And ever since, we have not had any communication with her. It's been very traumatic, very anxiety-inducing. That's what happened. We're hearing there's not even a formal charge. On Monday, the judge ruled that she's not a security threat and there was no charge, so he allowed her to get put out on bail. And I'm not sure exactly who, either the IDF or the Israeli Military Commission, somebody appealed it, and they have an automatic appeal process. So once that happened, she had to be in detention for what I believe is at least another 4 days, maybe up to another week. And from there, we'll see what they're just trying to find the charge now to charge her with, even though she's been in custody for a week. And this past week, she's been, questioned, interrogated, all that. It seems like they're just trying to find something to pin her. Just because they're annoyed with her for speaking her mind.
So when they came into your home, there was no explanation whatever why they were there, or were they specifically looking for her, or were they seeking other people when they came into your home?
No. I mean, apparently they were looking for her, but we had no knowledge. Like, she would have been fine with coming in, and like if they had something against her, she would have definitely like came in and handled the situation. But no, we had no idea she was wanted or they were looking for her. They did come into my village that day and they took multiple people, all for what it appears to be like social media, just something that they may have liked that they don't like, something just supporting Palestine or so.
Well,
that's all I know about that.
Let's bring in Edward Ahmed Mitchell to talk about Samaha Ismail's case. And then we're going to talk about the other cases. Another young man from your community itself, from Gretna, a Palestinian-American, was just killed by Israeli forces in the occupied West Bank. But first, let's continue with Samaher's arrest. Edward Ahmed Mitchell, you and Suleiman and others held a news conference on Monday in Washington, D.C., demanding the State Department deal with these Palestinian Americans. Can you talk about what they're saying about Samaha Ismail?
Thanks for having me, Amy. So look, the Israeli government is completely out of control. They're not only committing a genocide against Palestinians in Gaza, but they are targeting, kidnapping, even killing Palestinian Americans in Gaza and the West Bank. This attack on Sabah is just the latest example of that. And our State Department is, to be frank, not doing enough. They claim they are working behind the scenes to look into the issue. They made general statements about the importance of protecting American citizens abroad. But the reality is they are not publicly condemning or taking any concrete action to hold the Israeli government accountable for abusing American citizens. And if even Palestinian Americans are not safe, you can imagine that Palestinians are not safe at all. And so that's the condition we're in. The State Department is just making general vague statements, you know, that they could say about anything, boilerplate statements, but they're not using any concrete action to protect American citizens who are being attacked by the Israeli government.
We're going to break and then come back to this discussion and talk about a young man from Gretna, Louisiana, just like Samaher Ismail is from Gretna, Louisiana. But this teen was killed. We're talking to Edward Ahmed Mitchell, civil rights attorney and national deputy director of CARE, the Council on American Islamic Relations. And we're speaking with Samaher's son, Suleiman Hamed. Stay with us. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. The family of... We're looking at calls for the U.S. State Department to address the killing, the arrests, and attacks on Palestinian Americans, both in the occupied territories and here at home. We just spoke about the case of Samaher Ismail, a Palestinian American woman from Gretna, Louisiana, forcibly taken by Israeli soldiers in the occupied West Bank earlier this week. Meanwhile, the family of two Palestinian American brothers say the pair, their Canadian father and three other relatives, have been detained after an Israeli raid on their home in Gaza. The brothers Barak and Hashem Lagha are age 18 and 20. National Security spokesperson John Kirby said the U.S. will talk to Israel about the detention of the brothers as well as Samaher Ismail. We also learned about the stabbing in Texas, the Sunday stabbing in Austin of 23-year-old Palestinian-American Zakaria Dor, which is being called a hate crime. For more, we continue with Edward Ahmed Mitchell, civil rights attorney and national deputy director of CARE, the Council on American Islamic Relations, and Suleiman Hamed, Samaher Ismail's son. If you can talk about this arrest, killing, and detention attacks on Palestinian Americans, what the State Department is saying in each case. We've also learned about the killing of two Palestinian American teens, one in Bilu. The State Department is just saying they're looking into this, as well as another young man from Gretna.
Amy, sadly, you have described what the State Department is saying, and it's what they say every time this happens. We're looking into it. We care about American citizens abroad. And that's about all you get from them. No condemnations of the Israeli government, no concrete action, nothing. And so whether it's the shooting of the young man from New Orleans who was shot in the head while driving in a car with his family, whether it's the kidnapping of the two Palestinian Americans from Gaza, one of them already had a broken leg and whose home had been destroyed twice by Israeli bombing, you don't get much from the State Department other than we're looking into it and we care about the safety of American citizens abroad. What they need to be doing is very clearly and explicitly condemning the Israeli government for attacking not only American citizens who are in Palestine, but also Palestinians in general. And as long as the Israeli government feels that the American government will not hold them accountable for even targeting American citizens, then of course they're going to target everyone without any sort of with impunity. Sadly, and that's what we're seeing happen.
Yeah, I wanted to ask Suleiman, the efforts by all the attention so far in world press coverage has been on Gaza for the most part, not on what is happening to Palestinians in the West Bank. You mentioned that when your mother was taken, was arrested, there were others in this in your same town that were arrested by the IDF. Can you talk about what life is like for those living in the West Bank today?
Yeah, of course. It's filled with just humiliation, harassment by Israeli forces. They come in, they could come in the middle of the night and take your little boy, take your little girl, take your mom, take your dad. They have no respect for us. They have said on record multiple times that they see us as animals, and that's how it feels like. We're second class, even third class citizens to them. And like you said, like, this was all in the West Bank. This isn't a war zone. There's no Hamas. There's nothing like that over there. So it's just, again, they treat us poorly. And I want to actually add something, because I forgot to mention this, but, you know, about my mom's condition, her lawyer had said that she had been beaten in prison. She witnessed and wrote an official statement that we got to the U.S. Embassy that said that she had bruises, black and blue, all over her body, specifically on her hands and back. She was shaking from lack of, like, I guess, medication and the abuse she's received. They've had her medication for over 7 days now. Now it's like day nine, and they still have yet to administer it. You know, they're just cruel. They're cruel. And, you know, it's not a way to treat a person, first of all, and not a way to treat a U.S. citizen. And I want to see the embassy, you know, speak up about that. And
I want to
go see my mom.
I want to go to State Department spokesperson Matthew Miller addressing reporters on Tuesday.
When we see reports of U.S. citizens that have been detained, have been arrested, that have been killed, have been in any way potentially mistreated, we first gather information. If it's appropriate, we ask for a full investigation. If that investigation shows that there ought to be accountability, we call for accountability measures. I will also state that when it comes to activity in Israel, the United States has shown that it is willing to impose its own accountability measures when you think it's appropriate.
So that's Matthew Miller. And I want to address this to the lawyer, looking also at the case of Tawfiq Abdel-Jabbar, the 17-year-old Palestinian-American shot and killed in the occupied West Bank last week. Tawfiq was born again in Gretna, Louisiana, across the river from New Orleans. He and his family returned frequently to their ancestral home in the village of Al-Masrah, Al-Sharkeya, in the occupied West Bank. On January 19, Tawfiq and a friend were driving in a pickup truck on a dirt road near the village when they came under fire from at least 10 shots hitting the truck. One of the bullets struck Tawfiq in the head. The car skidded off the road, flipped several times before coming to a stop. He was pronounced dead when he was brought to the hospital in Ramallah. Israeli police didn't identify who fired the shots, but described the incident as, quote, ostensibly involving an off-duty law enforcement officer, a soldier, and a civilian. The White House has called for a transparent investigation into the killing. Edward Ahmed Mitchell, if you can tell us more about this case, and then we'll talk about just what happened outside Austin, Texas, a case you're representing as well.
So it's been almost a month since that young man was shot in the head and killed. Has the State Department done anything more? Has the Israeli government announced charges against those responsible? No, because they're not going to do it. You don't ask the abuser to investigate himself. What the State Department is doing is releasing boilerplate statements after these incidents occur, and then nothing happens. And you know this because you can go back even further. We all remember the assassination of Shireen Abu Akleh, what, a few years ago. Has anyone been charged with killing her? Has the Israeli government held anyone accountable? No. In fact, the Israeli government has said they're not going to charge anyone with killing her, even though it was a sniper who did it. She was wearing a press vest, and even the people who tried to save her were then shot at. The Israeli government is not going to hold itself accountable. Only the American government can do that. But the American government is refusing to do so. And so whether it's, again, the young man who was shot in the head, the two people who are kidnapped in Gaza, or Samahar who was kidnapped in the West Bank, you see the same pattern over and over and over again. The State Department says something very basic and generic, and then they don't do anything about it, and they wait for the story to fade away. And that sends the message to Israel, you can do whatever you want, even to American citizens, and no one will hold you accountable.
And how significant is it that the Austin police have declared a hate crime of the attack on Zachariah Dorr and his friends in Austin? Explain what happened. You are involved with this case, Edward.
Yes. Yeah, so this is a case we've been helping with. So on February 4th, there was a pro-ceasefire protest held in Austin. After this event, Zachariah and three of his friends were traveling home in a car. They had the keffiyeh flag hanging out of their car with Free Palestine written on it. They had other signs of Palestine on the car. When they got to a stop sign, a man named Brent Baker approached their car, attempted to rip the flag off the car, and then attacked them, opened the back door, pulled Zachariah out of the car. A fight ensued. His three friends jumped out and tried to help him. They subdued the guy, the attacker, and then he pulled out a knife. And Zachariah actually jumped in the way of one of his friends and saved them, but was stabbed in the process. So the police department relatively quickly confirmed what we knew and what we'd said and what we asked them to say, which is that it was a hate crime. And this is just the latest example of an anti-Palestinian or anti-Muslim hate crime in the United States. We all know about the six-year-old boy Wadia who was stabbed and killed outside of Chicago back in October by his anti-Muslim landlord. We know about the shooting of three Palestinian college kids in Burlington, Vermont, who are, again, wearing the keffiyeh out in public and just shot on the street. This is happening again and again because, Amy, there's not only a war happening against Palestinians in Gaza, there is a war happening against Palestinian Americans, a war on their right to free speech, a war on their culture, and that is designed to silence them. And you can't weaponize anti-Muslim bigotry and anti-Palestinian racism against people in Gaza without it having blowback here in America on people right here at home. And that's what we've been seeing over the past 4 months.
Suleiman, your final comment as we wrap up this segment, if you can talk about your mother.
Yeah, sure. My mom, I mean, she's the sweetest lady. Everybody knows her in our community. She's a teacher. She was a teacher, a businesswoman, a mother of four. She raised us with good morals. She raised us to be good kids, professionals. Again, just the sweetest woman, a helper. She just, again, she expresses her opinion, and sometimes she demands justice, and you know, I applaud her for that. She's my hero for that. I don't think it's anything for her to be imprisoned about.
Well, so, Suleiman Hamed, we want to thank you for being with us. We'll continue to follow your mother's case. And Edward Ahmed Mitchell, civil rights attorney and national deputy director of CARE, the Council on American Islamic Relations. That does it for our show. We want to thank all those who participated in producing today's broadcast. Mike Burke, Renee Fels, Nermeen Sheikh, Dina Guzder, Messiah Rhodes. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Go to democracynow.org for all transcripts and podcasts.
Open Mic on CJSF 90.1 is where you can listen to fresh new releases from any genre, any day of the week. Visit cjsf.ca for the latest open mic schedule.
Radio Rewind. Now we wait it. Radio Rewind. Now we wait it. Radio Rewind. Radio Rewind.
The following content has previously aired on CJSF. But don't worry, we'll be back next week with fresh content. CJSF 90.1 FM. Diverse. Independent. Yours.